So I can I presume you're back to synthesizer this week?
Yeah, I felt a little bit synthy. I woke up on the synthy side of the bed, if you know what I mean.
In fact, I do. I know exactly what you mean. Because I too woke up on the synthy side of the bed.
Did you?
Yep. And there was marvellous people there. There was... Gary...
Tell me about all the people.
Gary Newman was there.
Oh my gosh.
Erasure.
What was Gary Newman wearing?
Nothing.
Did he have his electric friend with him?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like his electric friend is a vibrator?
Unpopular opinion, but I prefer the Sugar Babes version.
Freak in the morning, freak in the evening.
It's cold outside. There's a friend that I left in the doorway.
Can you give me something to work with here?
Anyway, yeah, we better get started with some work.
Yeah.
We've got the gorillas on today. The gorilla band.
No, we don't. We have a silverbacks.
Yeah, the silverback gorillas.
The silverback gorillas. Yeah. Have you listened to them?
If I said yes, would you believe me?
Like, you fucking one job to do, and it's to listen to the bands that come on here.
I have other jobs. I create the new theme song for the bloody Ruddy Bloody Cocktail song.
Well, no, they're not the silver. They are the Silverbacks. They're not the Gorillas. Really cool band.
What kind of music do they play?
It's like, do you know what? I don't want to just say post-punk. It's kind of like guitar indie alternative. One of the bass players. She comes in with like nice little quirky sort of parts. It reminds me a bit of Blondie, but yeah, it's interesting. I think you'd like it. So let me ask you again, because I don't think we can actually say we didn't listen to their music. So do you know who we've got on today?
Yeah, it's the Gorilla Band.
No, it's not the Gorilla Band. It's Silverbacks.
The Silverback Gorilla Band.
It's Silverback Gorilla Band, I suppose. Have you listened to any of their music?
Yeah, I particularly like the way their bass player comes up with like really cool little bits that come in. You know what I mean?
Okay, for the listeners,
she reminds me of Blondie.
You can't just steal my fucking bits.
Listen, it's a compliment. If you say a good bit and I steal it, that's a compliment to you. From me, you're welcome.
I actually have met them before. I met them when I was at a festival a few years ago, but just before COVID. So guess what I'm going to be asking them about?
Now, listen, I'll let you away with one lockdown question, okay? Otherwise, I'm going to bloody stop the whole show. That's me stopping the record.
I'm trying to think of if there's been any sort of crack in my life.
You got a haircut?
I got a haircut. What do you think of it?
I'm not a big fan, mate.
Yeah.
I haven't cut enough off.
It's only a two. But yeah, I walked into the guy and he kind of semi-recognized me and he said,
decided to take his revenge upon you. My question is, why is it so short at the top and long at the sides? You look like a sort of handsome version of that very famous short actor that's on Always Sunny in Philadelphia. What's his name? You know,
Rob McElhenney. I'm a famous story. So I walked in and he said, "Oh, have you been? You were here. Did you get your last haircut here?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "How long ago was that?" And I said, "A year." And then he looked me dead in the eye and said, "That's good business." So yeah, he's booked me in for 6 months. But no, he obviously doesn't like me very much. Who cuts your hair?
My mum.
Shout out to legendary Turkish barber in...
Shout out to the Turkish barbers of Portadown, Banbridge, Newry.
And Lurgan.
Lurgan. Shout out to the Turkish barbers in Dublin. Shout out to the Turkish barbers in Spain. Shout out to the Turkish barbers in Turkey, otherwise known as just barbers.
Shout out to them all.
Liquid Core. Talk about the music in your life.
Liquid Chords.
With Gary and Killian from Silverbacks. How's it getting on, boys?
Hey, man. How are you?
Good to have yous. The first time I heard of yourselves was when I caught you at Soon Festival in Cardiff. It was like late 2019, prior to all the halcyon days pre-COVID. I was like stumbling solo. It was my first solo venture as a solo artist out to a festival beyond Ireland, and caught yous, and it was brilliant. How have things been since then? Could you put it into a few words, or would we have to do another podcast? What's
boring.
Jesus.
It's kind of a weird one, because we kind of really, in the year leading up to like COVID, we had kind of really started to kick off and kind of playing a lot more, getting a lot more gigs. And I think at the start of COVID, like, we were even a little bit kind of relieved when we thought it was going to be like a 6-week break, because we'd been like, felt like we'd been flying to London every Thursday evening or flying somewhere and then flying back Friday morning to get back for work to try and keep as much days as we could for the other day that's coming up. So I think everyone, for the first couple of weeks, we were all a bit like, oh, great, we don't have to go near an airport. Not that we're high flyers, but just felt like for like the three months before it was just like a batch of gigs, and like we were too afraid to say no to any of them. So we were just doing everything. But kind of then very quickly after that, it was like, God, we need to, you start to miss it very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Cardiff gig, was it in September? If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, it would have been,
And then so between September and February, we were quite busy, and then lockdown kicked in. Am I remembering that correctly? Yeah. It's all a blur.
I think we had done two gigs that day, because we had done, I think, maybe...
You come from Bristol,
I think. From Bristol, yeah. So we like, and then the place we played in Cardiff, it was like playing like a 21st that we weren't invited to. It was like in this real weird pub. And it was like upstairs, and like I could just see, remember seeing a lot of confused heads. Like I felt like we kind of got one of the venues that was just slightly too far out from the center of Cardiff, and people were confused. It was great.
Because I had the exact same problem. I was in the same place a few hours before, and I was thinking, I'm going to stay around for people here, because it's solidarity with the ones that have to play this venue. So tell me about the initial start with the band. He's released the first track in 2017, but how did you just kind of form? How did you just come together?
Will I answer this one, Gary?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So the Silverbacks was the name for very much a demo project for Daniel and I. Daniel's my brother, who's the singer in the band. And he met Patter and I met Emma doing music courses in Maynooth. And then that's going back to 2011 on. So we had Patter and Emma in the band for a bit, but then Patter went to France to follow his French studies. And then so around 2016, he came back and Daniel was saying, you know, why don't we start playing with Patter again? But up until that point, we were very much, let's record something, put it up onto SoundCloud. We weren't really a live unit. And, We had two or three different drummers as well. And then Patter recommended that we get in touch with Gary, because Gary was free. And that's when the five-piece kind of kicked off. Was it 2016? Gary, am I remembering that right? 2017?
I think the summer of 2016, wasn't it? And then we kind of started playing towards the October of that year, I think was the first gig or something like that.
Yeah, and then we finally kind of had a functioning band, if that makes sense. We had something that we could bring to a venue. And you know, the heads to go to a studio and actually record one of the songs properly, rather than doing a DIY job on it with Zoom mics at home. So that's kind of where we're at for the moment. We're still riding that wave of us being a five piece. and enjoying it.
That is, it's interesting because you're saying you'd be kind of, well, aside from Gary, who came a bit later, but you've been playing from 2011, so you really had like a long time to, before your first song came out. It wasn't just like, oh, here, we've been a band 5 minutes, we're releasing something. You really must have been like quite formed by the time you were ready to go.
Yeah, like Daniel and I were in bands at school, and I know Patter and Gary were in bands going through school as well, but Daniel and I kind of just only really jammed ever at home, and then we enjoyed putting it out on Bandcamp and seeing if we could get any reception. And really, that's how Daniel and Patter kind of hit it off, was because they started sharing ideas with each other. And then it was the same with Emma. Emma and I started dating, and then we started jamming together as a result. And then so it's all kind of happened naturally. And then the big one was kind of having a consistent eager beaver drummer like Gary. Someone motivated to actually get us booked for gigs. And then through Gary and Patter also, we you know, as Gary was saying earlier on, we were just saying yes to every gig. So we would be going down to Newbridge and playing pubs and venues there. And that's when we ran into Gav, who's been our manager since about 2017.
Yeah.
So that's been like the, it's kind of going from Dal and I just hanging out at home to us being a well-oiled machine out on the road.
But you kind of came along the same sort of period as, you know, like a lot of, it's like a kind of post-punk sort of indie scene in Dublin, the likes of Fontaines, Murder Capital, and Girl Band, who you, I think you actually have played with a few times.
We did the UK and some of the European tour when they came back, which was really great.
And how is that? Do you find that's been like a useful thing to kind of have contemporaries who are, you know, not, he's all sound very different, you have your own unique thing, but you're in the same sort of like, you know, dwelling, I guess. Has that been useful, or does it get or does it become a bit, I don't know, frustrating when people kind of put you together?
I think there's kind of two parts to it. Like, there's obviously, it's really great to be in Ireland at the moment because like there is so many bands that are making really great music, and like there really is a, there's definitely like a quality of music that's coming out, being driven, I suppose, by how really good artist there is. But I suppose on the other side of it as well, I'm sure it's the same for everyone. Like, you know, it's it can, the media and like, you know, some of the articles, it's very much want to create this, you know, Dublin is the home of post-punk and all of this stuff. And I don't necessarily always felt, especially like I would think like that, us, the Fontaines, and just Mustard, like at the start, I felt like there was like, but in my eyes, we sound actually like very different bands, I always thought. And it's, you know, it's there's definitely like, you know, it's great to see it all coming out, but I thought there was like maybe a little bit of a heavy-handedness on, you know, this big scene where everyone is, you know, hanging out, you know, doing punk. I thought it was a bit
Seattle part two.
There was an NME article that came out which I think said something like Dublin or Ireland is the new home of post-punk, and then which is like, whatever you want to say about that article, it was actually, I think it was our first time ever making it into NME, so so there's upsides to it all as well, you know, like,
you could really tweet them, be like, actually that's incorrect.
Excuse me.
And, you know, we've playing with all those guys is always great as well. Like, because like we, like when the Fontaines did the Button Factory like years ago, we did the support there, and it's a real kind of kick up the arse to go, well, Jesus, these lads are doing it, you know, and you know, kind of for, you know, it's like they're doing it, like we should really give it a try because like hopefully we could do it as well, you know. So it's there's that, like, you know, it's kind of when you, a girl band is, as well, especially kind of, you kind of go, geez, these lads, like they went and made a go of this, and it kind of gives you a little bit more confidence to go, well, hopefully, you know, you can do it as well. So it's nice to have that, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, as a singer-songwriter, like, we're all very unique and different, so we never get those sort of comparisons, you know, but no, but I like, definitely with your music, it's so, to me, there's actually three perfect examples: Fontaines, Just Mustard, and yourselves. Just, I find it completely different. You know, if you weren't from the same location, I don't think there would be comparisons made, like, personally, but I'm sure there are shared elements in what you do.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure there's definitely similar influences and stuff like that. And, you know, I suppose when you look at it very broadly, you can probably try and paint it with the one brush, but I think if you get into it, you kind of see the variance, I would say.
Totally. So you went, like, you kind of released singles, I guess, 2018, 2019, and Dunkirk. I think it was probably like your first, I guess, what the single that probably took you to the next level. I don't know what these levels are like, but it got quite a significant amount of radio play, Killian, from what I remember.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying that it took us to the next level, because it's, I think we went in initially to record some songs with Stephen Dunn and Lamplight, and we were already, you know, delighted with how those songs came out. But I think we were still maybe, you know, unused to the five of us going into a studio at that point. It was very much, well, speaking from my side anyway, I wasn't used to going into a studio, which was one of the best things that kind of happened when we started rolling as a five-piece was, you know, we could finally save up gig money and look forward to going into a studio and working with a proper sound engineer and producer. And I think Dunkirk worked really well because just the drum sound was nailed. Gary, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the drums hit hard on that song.
Yeah, and I think it was the first song that we had done two songs with Stephen, and then we said we'd kind of been in touch with Dan Fox, and we said we'd go in and try something with him. And it's not like any Dan versus Steve, but I think with Dunkirk, it was felt like more of our firsts. Like, you know, it felt like a really good song, you know, and you kind of have that feeling about something. We were doing it when we kind of were jamming it. We were like, okay, this is actually, like, I personally kind of felt like, well, we kind of stepped up a little bit here in terms of, you know, the other songs were good, but I kind of felt like this one was pretty good. And it kind of just got legs a little bit. And then we kind of put it out before the album was ready, but it really was that was the kickoff point where we started thinking about doing the album. Even though we'd released it as a single, we're like, okay, well, let's go and get this done. And I know it probably seems, you know, from the outside, between Dunkirk being released as an original single and then by the time the album came out, it seemed like a really long time. But we actually had the album recorded for about maybe 18 months, maybe just a little less between when we finished recording and when we put it out, because we fell into all of the industry pitfalls of waiting for stuff that was being promised that never got delivered, things falling through at the last minute, contracts fit, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we had a kind of quite a long time between them, even though all the stuff was done quite close together. It was just a really long waiting to get that first thing out, and then getting the rest of it out, it was kind of took us a while.
Yeah,
that's like one of the things I've said it before, like, that's when you can see like the five of you, and there's obviously like the camaraderie and like you doing that together. That's it. I think the difference being in a band, for me, it's been like one of the difficult things, doing it by yourself. I think they're natural, like, as you said, those pitfalls, like, and even it's natural to like expect the best, you know, hope for the best. And, you know, when people say things in the industry, like, it's such a strange music industry, it's just so different. It's like people say things and then it just doesn't happen, and it's like in any other industry, like, again, it probably wouldn't happen like that. But it's nice to celebrate the successes with people, but it's also good when there's like four other people in the band who are totally gutted about that shit as you are, you know. And
I think it would be very hard to, like, I always see when people are doing it, like, you know, by themselves, like, to me, it's another level, because at least when something goes wrong, I'd say you've got that kind of support group, but it'll always be at least one person to be like, all right, well, it's happened now, let's pull on. And you don't always have to be the one that's trying to keep yourself moving forward, because it's not always the easiest things to bounce back from. So I think if there's a groupie, there's always someone who'll eventually level out and just be like, all right, it's done, let's go, and we'll kind of drag the rest along.
Who's the level head out of you, Fev?
Gary.
I don't know. It depends on what the situation is.
Okay. So where did you record the album then? Was it Steve who recorded Dunkirk with?
No, sorry. So I was just saying, the reason I brought up Stephen was because we had gone into the studio with Stephen, but I felt like we weren't ready for our studio time. Mm-hmm. And then that's why I was saying that Dunkirk going in with Dan Fox kind of felt like a step up, but it wasn't. It was just because we were kind of familiar now with the whole process of you're going in to get a song done that day and everything. But no, so the whole album was recorded with Daniel Fox, who's okay. The bassist in aforementioned girl band.
Cool. That's the last girl band plug now.
That's shit, because I was actually going to ask you a question about that. Was that after touring with them, or did you know Dan prior?
We actually didn't know the tour was after we recorded the album, but the reason we went in with Dan was because everyone always thinks because, you know, he records the girl band stuff, but it was actually the drum and guitar sound on the first Otramon singles that Dan had done with Paddy Hannah. So we thought they were great, and that's kind of the sound that we were hoping to, something close to what we wanted. So that's kind of why we jumped in with Dan. So I think we met him the first day we went in to record, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. No, great band. Like I've never actually got to see them live. Everybody just raves about them.
They're not that good.
I heard you carried that tour. He's wrong.
No one was there to see them.
So when you did release the album, I guess as well, because you released it 2020, was there like, God, imagine, like you have this thing sitting for a while anyway, and then are you just thinking, okay, we'll hold off until COVID stops, or was there just... What was the story like? What was the point when you went, okay, we'll have to put this out now?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Kiel, but I think we had a tour booked for either March or May, sorry, I think. And the distributor that we were going through asked us to not put out the album because just of the uncertainty of everything. So the tour got cancelled and we didn't really mind. And then as it went on, they were trying to push it and we just kind of went, listen, we need to just... Because we already pretty much... had our hearts set and going in recording the next album, and you know, it delayed us so much already that we were willing to risk not being able to tour or it maybe getting a little bit lost in the shuffle just to get it out. So we just said we decided to do it, and it was actually in hindsight it was like probably pretty good for us because there wasn't a whole lot being released, you know, people were buying a lot of vinyl at the time, you know, it was kind of probably in hindsight pretty good that we released it when we did, so it worked out well.
Maybe that was one thing that happened with Fad, was that some of our fans might have been like, oh, well, this is a surprise. The only downside was obviously not being able to gig it, but we're very much looking forward to hopefully playing some of those songs and some new ones towards the end of this year.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was also thinking was, I'm not sure if Gary's had this thought too, or maybe yourself, Connor, but when you put out something new and it gets received in a certain way, one of the ways to quantify if it's, you know, people are happy with it is the reaction from a crowd at the gig when you're playing the song. So I'm intrigued. I wonder if, you know, our demographic has changed at all since before the pandemic, if we've tapped into that teen market yet. Or if it's just going to be a lot of old dudes as usual.
Fuck, I can't get anybody. Jesus, I take the old dudes.
It's all our uncles.
Because I want to chat about the album, but I just, while it's in my head, did you actually start on the second album?
We have a second album ready to go. We can't give out too many details yet. Our managers told us not to, but... it's on the way.
Good.
Yeah, we're by the end of the year we should have it out, and we're gonna make announcements are coming in the next hopefully 5 or 6 weeks to kind of get everything rolling. Hopefully,
that'll be so. Like, yeah, you just have the tour in September, isn't it?
End of October, early November, I think, isn't it? Or maybe end of September, early October. Yeah, one of those. Anyway, it's. Not that I don't know when I'm going to tour, it's just I don't like looking at it because I keep getting disappointed every time it gets cancelled, so I'm not even trying not to even think about that it's happening.
It would, it's so, because there's so many exciting things, like you're obviously going to, as you said, the first reaction from a crowd when you play the album and knowing that you've got something ahead. I think that's that can be like the hardest part sometimes, like having... you know, like a vision, like long term. And I think if you know that you've got the second album coming, it's just, I think it's always nice to have these things way in advance, you know, and that they're just milestones that you can hit, and regardless of, you know, what happens in between, you have a vision for yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's so true, because like we're kind of, the way we always talk about ourselves is kind of, the guys love Yola Tango, but we kind of always try and say that we're going to try our best to be like a career band where as we release more albums, each album, as Killian would say, it's going to make more sense when they're kind of all together and you kind of see it. So we're already demoing the next album, like number three. Like, so that's why we're, again, probably trying to, you know, we want to get this album out as soon as we can so that we're not, you know, we kind of want to get into a rhythm of probably doing an album a year when while we can, you know, because Dan and Killian and Emma are writing quite a lot, and, you know, so we want to, while it's flowing, we may as well do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's inspiring as well, like, to actually hear that too. They just, you know, these are so dedicated to it. And it'd be remiss for me not to mention this as well. The Brad Pitt advertisement. Like, that was just so bizarre. It was class. It was so cool. But, like, it was just... how did that... Or I don't know if I can ask you how it came about, but what did you think about it?
Yeah, it was a weird couple of weeks. Like, our manager sorted it through contacts that he had, and he actually didn't tell us for... Because he didn't want to tell us in case it fell through or whatever, but it was... yeah, it was just really surreal. It's like when I was looking at the cuts when they kind of sent across, you know, what it would be like, I was like, this really just feels like we just cut in our own music. it just felt kind of odd.
Yeah. But I got a message from my uncle asking me if we got any free pants with the ad campaign or whatever. And I was like, well, why is he asking for free pants? And then I looked up the price.
Yeah.
A couple of grand for a pair of Brioni pants. So there you go. Yeah.
I hope he's repaid at least what Brad Pitt was paid for that advertisement.
Yeah, yeah, same.
Yeah. Well, at least he can go to your gigs now. That's class.
Yeah.
I'm going to just go on to the next sort of section and just to chat about three songs that the band have kind of identified and that were important in, you know, bringing, I guess, in influencing you all. So, Killian, do you want to chat to us about the first one?
Yeah, so the first one, I kind of, just with the preparation for today, I know you mentioned to think of three songs, I kind of went down the route of what songs would kind of got us into music rather than the five of us collectively, because I think we have a diverse taste of music in the band and it's hard to, I think, encapsulate all of it with three picks. So I'm going to be very selfish with my first pick. It's the song that inspired me to pick up a guitar, and it's because of its opening riff. It's Highway Child by Jimi Hendrix, and it's whopper.
I actually watched the video. You have, I think it's just you kind of playing one of the songs off the...
Oh yeah, is it Madryoshka?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that, oh damn it, maybe I should have picked a bluegrass pick or something more.
No, no.
But yet, my first guitar, after I was teaching myself guitar for a while, and then I think my mom and dad recognized that music was the way I wanted to do music. So I started getting taught by a friend of my brother's after school for tenor. And then after a while, my mom and dad were like, okay, now we'll get you a teacher on Saturdays for longer. and that guy was a real bluegrass head. His name was Bill Roseman. He played in like a blues trio. And so a lot of that kind of country picking style is inspired by the songs I would have started off learning. Yeah, so that's where Madryoshka kind of comes from, that track.
Yeah. That's cool.
We really kind of, I know it's when people talk about it, but we really are a guitar band, you know, like where it's the, having three guitars makes you kind of have to be a bit more disciplined about how you use it. So it's not, you know, we, Killian and Patter and Dan make like real efforts into not just having, now, don't get me wrong, we love doing double lead lines and it happens quite a lot, but at other parts, like we don't want the guys just treat them hammering through and there's no space. So the intricacies between, especially Killian and Pat, ends up becoming quite technical, you know. When people realize it, they're kind of like, whoa.
Which brings us on to our second pick, if you want it now, Connor. I don't know.
do you know what, I'm going to get really nerdy here, just on that, like, that mightn't even use this because this might be too nerdy, but what would you say, like, with the three guitars, do you have like designated positions where you're like, okay, you know, this is my thing, this is, you know, the second guitar player's thing. Or do you just get into the room and you jam it and see what happens?
That's a cool question. I think Gary kind of summed up a lot of it there. So it's also to do with like emulating how we sound on stage. So for instance, Pater and I would play the more intricate lines because Daniel has to hold the vocal, and playing some of the guitar lines that Daniel writes and singing at the same time is quite hard. So Daniel usually ends up with the rhythmic guitar part. Mm-hmm. Pater and I will focus on the more noodly riffs on the side, and then usually what you're going to hear on album two is a little bit more guitar mini.
Nice.
Inspired by the great Thin Lizzy, and they would normally sit far left and far right.
So we really talked about Jimi Hendrix, so we really gave him a good, we honoured him well there.
Yeah.
What's the second song?
The second song was going to be See No Evil by Television. I rang Daniel before hopping on here, I asked him to make a pick, and he said, you have to talk about Television. And so from one guitar expert to, well, Tom Verlaine, who's an absolute genius on the guitar. And I think the reason Television would be a good shout is because I think a lot of their lines are clean and melodic, and that's one of the starting points for when Pater first joined the band. There was one song that we learned called Through a Curtain, which was really heavily inspired by Television, and I thought it was a good song to pick because it's the... I think the starting blocks of how we start to think about layering melodies against each other in the guitar parts. Yeah.
Cool. Actually, that is a band I know nothing about Television, so I'll have to check them out.
I was just going to say, I had actually never listened to a single Television song before I joined Silverbacks. Killian and Dan played it for the first time. Now I think they're great, but there was a first introduction.
And the third one? What have we got?
And then the third one. Sorry, Gary. Now I'm hogging the mic. The third one we picked Blondie just because, as we talked about it earlier on, I think Up the Nurses is very much our take on Blondie, and I think as Silverbacks releases more music, I'd like to think more Emma songs, as we call them, will be on the albums, and I think so. To tie the three picks in. What got me to pick up a guitar, and then what got Daniel and I and Pater writing nice melodies on top of each other, and maybe a sign to where we're going to in the future. Emma's Blondie vibe.
I loved all the songs on Fad, but I think it's just always interesting when there's another singer on there, and especially it just because her voice is obviously so different from your brother's. And like Muted Gold, I think that was kind of my, like, I think that's my. I really loved Up the Nurses, her solo when she sings it, but I just like how the contrast of that, she just kind of come in for little bits. It is Muted Gold, she kind of comes in.
Muted Gold was actually a little bit of I don't want to say a light bulb moment for us, but we had kind of up on that point, subconsciously or not, we always had, as Kim would say, Dan songs and Emma songs. And Muted Gold was kind of like when we did that and we were like, okay, well, we need to stop having it so... separation of church and state and start using what we had on the songs. I think because Muted Gold was actually recorded quite a while after the rest of the album, we did a 7-inch where with release with Sirens and Drool with Nice Swan, and originally we'd offered them Sirens and Muted Gold, but they actually really wanted Drool, so we swapped Drool off the album and put Muted Gold, because we'd record Sirens and Muted Gold together. If you knew, you'd kind of see where we were kind of, it was after the album, and it's kind of where closer to where we were going with album three, with kind of the more interaction with the two guys. But it's it's good. When I always like when I hear people say they like Muted Gold, because I think it bodes well for the next album.
Because there's more of that.
Sometimes when you think, because before I was chatting to Peter, I was just saying, I want to say Blondie, but I don't want to just go for Blondie because just blonde hair and plays bass. But like, do you know what I mean? But it just reminded me much.
No, that's the vibe.
She asked Killian to write her a Blondie song. Right. So that's what he wrote. It's fine.
I think the demo was called Blondie Rip Off. You're all right, Connor. Don't worry.
I was wondering, Peter, could we get a musical extract or something here?
Hi guys, good to meet you too. I'm Peter.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good, thank you. I am the musical director of the show. So Concha asks me every week to get some songs ready, but I tell them every bloody week we can't afford these songs.
Okay.
So sorry, but you know, that's just the way it is. Money is money and we don't have a lot of it. But what I can do is I can play for you a quick little Blondie song, right?
Woohoo!
Once I had a love and it was a gas. Soon turned out had a heart of glass. Seemed like the real thing, only to find much of mistrust, love's gone behind. Here's the other bit. It goes la da da. What a pleasing man is la da da. La pa dee da dee. There's no peace of mind. What I find is teasing you. It's just no good. You teasing like I do.
Beautiful.
Thanks very much, Peter. So lads, before you go,
I just want to say one thing, just that okay. Your listeners are really missing out because the looks that Peter gives while he's singing you down the camera is like some of the most intense stares I've had from someone singing at me.
Looks of love, Gary. Yeah. Looks of love.
We're going to have to get a video on, I think, in the future. Before you go, anything you want to just drop in terms of future plans? I don't mention the tours. Anything else we should look out for?
Yeah, the tour is kind of the big next thing, and then keep your eyes peeled in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we'll have some more information. What's coming up in the-
No, I got none to that, but thanks a million for having us on, and yeah, that was really a beautiful rendition of Blondie.
No, we delighted to have you. Did you enjoy the whiskey, okay?
Yeah, it's actually really good. Yeah. Smoothly here.
It's actually really good. We'll have to...
Keep on coming.
Yeah, we will. We will. Thanks so much, lads.
No worries, thank you.
So, yeah, they were lovely lads, aren't they?
Really nice.
Nice guys. And like, you know what? I actually thought, I'm sure every band we interview works hard, but they seem to really work hard when you're saying about how he tabs out some of the stuff for pretty. You don't seem impressed at all.
You'd never take time.
You've got such a great ear, a massive ear.
Is it as good as this? Like this one?
Here in my car. That was... Please, no, stop playing that song. Stop playing that song.
It's my favourite song.
Well, it would have been... Well, how amazing would it have been if they had said Gary Numan is a massive influence?
Okay. So, I love that one, Connor.
Yeah, me too. Really looking forward to getting it out there and... Yeah, can't wait to hear the second album. But look, I must dash. I have to head on here, doing a bit of a session.
Okay, cool. What kind of a session?
Just music session, just doing recording.
Yeah, playing a little bit of guitar.
Yeah, but yeah, I've got to bounce. But I'll catch you next week.
What kind of a tuner do you like? Because I'm pretty sure the listeners are going to want to know. A lot of people like podcasts because it reveals secrets about the gear that the musicians use. And, you know, like... One of my favourite bits of gear is the tuner.
I think you're just saying this so you can hold me here when I actually have to go somewhere.
No. This is important stuff.
Okay.
Which tuner do you use? Because there's a big difference between...
I use a chromatic tuner. I use the Boss chromatic tuner.
Boss. Okay. And how would you rate them as a sort of pedal?
Three thumbs up. It's...
Out of five or?
Out of five stars.
Five stars and three thumbs.
Yeah, I've got, I really have to go. So.
Yeah. Just before you go, what brand of cables do you use? Just quickly.
I don't know.
Just off the top of your head, favorite brand of cable.
Fender.
Yeah, okay. I like a Fender cable. My favourite, I'd have to say, would be... do you know the brand that you get on Amazon called Gator? Alligator.
No.
Cables. Because they're cheaper.
Okay. Right. Bye.
Yep.
What?
Listen, I put effort into this. I've collated these questions for you. These are listener-based questions. People have tweeted these in to you.
Okay, give me some of the questions.
Okay. Dear Connor, I really liked your hair before you had it cut. what kind of hair gel do you use? And that's from Steve.
Well, Steve... I don't actually use hair gel. I just take a dab of limoncello, rub it together in my hands, and put it back. Dan?
I'm just getting the mailbag because we've had a few listener questions sent in. Now, Connor, I'm gonna open up this first question here because this is a bit of a what's the word I'm looking for here? It's a bit of a hardball question, right? Mm-hmm. This question is about your first EP that you released. This listener, Jacob here, he wants to know, what kind of tuner did you use? Next week on Liquid Chords, Connor and Peter go to a coffee shop in which a monster steals their identities. This monster is a big, hairy beast, and he wants to steal everyone's identities and sell them to a corporation based in Malaysia. So, get your popcorn ready and tighten up your laces and keep your passports hidden very well in a little pouch, which you keep around your waist underneath your t-shirt so nobody can steal it, all right? Because if someone, honestly, an identity is a very important part of your life, and if someone steals it from you, it's going to be really bad.
And this.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.